Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. A special welcome to our new affiliate, WPEK 880 AM, The Revolution in Asheville, North Carolina, which is actually a really nice town. I don't know if any of you folks have ever spent any time there. It's beautiful in the Appalachian Mountains. It's an artist town, great place. Love to have you there. Folks, if you call in from Asheville, you will get priority all this week. So call in at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Asheville's having a good week this week. Donald Trump is not. I caution all Republicans, head for the hills. Donald Trump is imploding. He's had some bad weeks. He said some crazy things. But this week, well, last week, today's Monday, last week really takes the cake. It began, of course, with his attack on Gold Star parents. Gold Star parents, of course, are those parents who've lost a son or daughter fighting for the United States in the military. The Khan family came up during the Democratic National Convention. The father, Khizr Khan, did something that I like to think came from me. I like to think he copied me, but I realize I'm not the only one who does this. He held up the Constitution like a cross to scare away a vampire and challenged Donald Trump if he'd ever read it. Pretty good technique. And indeed, I've been handing out pocket constitutions in my district. It's something, if you know me, that I've been doing for more than a decade now. And I'm not jealous. I'm just saying, Mr. Khan, you know, join the liberal constitution wielding cohort that I plan to form. But he first attacked the mother, Mrs. Khan, for not speaking. She later said it was because of the tremendous grief seeing her son's photo blown up on the wall. But that was just the beginning of Donald Trump's week. He went on to say that Russia, he would never, ever, ever allow Russia in Ukraine, to which he was interrupted by a reminder that Russia is in Ukraine right now, having taken Crimea, at which point he said that, well, basically they could have Crimea. Then he went on to to declare that if he loses, the election is rigged. Great way to get a nice little revolution if he could get one started. He even attacked a baby, kicked a crying baby out of a rally in Virginia. You know, that's when you start attacking babies, that's just not a good sign. There are so many things he did wrong that, it's hard to remember them all. Of course, it shows up in the polls. The polls show Hillary Clinton her widest lead ever. Republicans are fastly deserting the sinking ship like rats on the Titanic. Many of them have endorsed Hillary Clinton. Members of Congress have. And Donald Trump returned the favor by, at least initially, refusing to endorse such clear Republican stalwarts as the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. John McCain. He said John McCain had done enough for vets. Kelly Ayotte, Senator of New Hampshire. Until Paul Ryan just basically said this is all very bizarre. Now, Trump's been walking back a lot of his stuff. The plane he claimed he saw of Iran that he didn't see, he admitted that it was the wrong plane. He did finally very quietly endorse Paul Ryan and John McCain and Kelly Ayotte. And today he's giving a speech on taxes, sticking very closely to his teleprompter, which he once mocked. They're trying to rein him in. But the real question is, what do our Republicans thinking? They must be really nervous right now. And so to get a feel on Republicans thinking, I've invited one of my good friends, probably my closest Republican friend, someone I've known for more than 10 years, since he's seen me wave the Constitution around, and someone who I think can give me some insight into what a Republican thinks of Donald Trump. His name is Mike Lane. He is the founder of Intellifant Strategies. He tries to give intelligence to elephants. He tries to get Republicans elected. But Mike, even you must admit, It was a very bad week for Donald Trump.
Mark, a couple things first.
Yeah.
I would like to join you in your welcome to your new Asheville listeners. I used to be a regular down there. My parents retired to Hendersonville, North Carolina, which is literally a stone's throw down the road from Asheville. I know and love the area, and I join you in welcoming all your Asheville listeners. It's a great area of the country.
It is indeed. A beautiful area and a great place in the summer because it stays cool in the mountains.
It's a great place, 365.
That's true.
Anyway, so let's get to the Trump campaign. Look, I'll be the first to admit that it was not a great week. Trump went into the week, which included, you know, it's difficult to really figure out when the convention ended and when Trump's bad stuff began, because they sort of blended and overlapped a little bit. But it went from the end of the Republican convention with Trump, let's say, averaging about a 5 or a 6 point lead in the polls over Hillary Clinton, to the end of a 10-day stretch, which included both her convention bump and his missteps, to the point where I looked up the Real Clear Politics average this morning, and Hillary has a 7 point lead over Trump. So that's a swing of about 12 points in what you might call 10 or 12 days. Clearly not a good stretch, I'll admit that.
Real quick, although I agree that 7's about right for now, I would say Donald Trump was ahead by a couple points, not 5, but I'm not going to quibble. We both agree it was a bad week. Let me ask you, though, because you are a Republican who certainly did not support Donald Trump. You supported, I believe, Marco Rubio at first, and then I think you switched to, was it Kasich? I don't remember. I don't want to mistake.
No, actually, for the record, I was a Scott Walker guy first.
Scott Walker.
To Rubio when Walker dropped out.
Right.
After driving, after my support drove two of them out of the race, I decided to leave the rest of them alone.
Right. But there are people in your party still to this day, the Never Trump faction that you know, got beaten at the convention. Many of them are still talking, saying, you know, Paul Ryan would win in a landslide against Hillary Clinton. They're still trying to do something. Now, I don't know how they can do it legally within the RNC rules. I think it's a long shot at best, and I don't think it's going to happen. But
yeah,
the point is,
you know, Mark, everybody has their ways of getting their name in the paper and their ideas and things like that. But and the press, of course, aids and abets this because it makes for good copy and sells newspapers, which sells advertising revenue. But the bottom line is Donald Trump is the nominee. He's going to be the nominee on Election Day, and we'll see who gets sworn in as president.
No. I agree with you that he will be the nominee, but it's not just the Never Trump folk. It's some real important people. It is former presidents, George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. It is John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, who didn't show up at his convention, the Republican National Convention in Ohio, as he pointed out to Jake Tapper yesterday. He thinks he's the first sitting governor ever not to attend a national convention, at least in modern times. And I don't that seems right to me, particularly one of his own party. You've got, you know, people like George Will, Charles Krauthammer. I mean, standard, very conservative people who, Bret Stephens of The Wall Street Journal, the whole sort of Republican intelligentsia, distancing themselves. Some of them have even endorsed Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's not just a few diehard Never Trump folks. The mainstream of your party is heading for the hills.
Well, Mark, you overstate the case, of course, as you should, because it's your job. But the simple fact of the matter is that it's not that overwhelming. Everyone hurts. I will admit that. You'd rather have good press than bad press. You'd rather have endorsements than not endorsements. You'd rather have your opponent having a bad day than you having a bad day. But when it comes to it, it's August. You know, there just aren't that many people paying attention right now. Nothing is irretrievable at this point, although I will concede that we're getting to the point where a candidate who has run a pretty bad campaign since the nominating convention is approaching the point where he's really got to get it on track and see if he can stay on message, which has never been really one of Trump's strengths, nor one of the things that launched him into the success that he's had. You know, one day does not a campaign make, but you mentioned
but a week or two or three that starts to make it.
You mentioned that he was in Detroit today in front of the Detroit
Yes.
Economic Club.
Yes.
His speech was universally, fabulously received. There was an extensive coordinated effort on behalf of the Clinton people to disrupt them and to make it a speech in which he would get off message and lash out at 14 consecutive well-spaced protesters. He didn't take the bait. He stuck to the script. He delivered a speech that not only did the head of the Detroit Economic Club say, wow, and not only did he receive several standing ovations from the Detroit Economic Club, but the general commentary on even CNN, which we like to refer to as the Clinton News Network, is
hardly
very favorable for him.
Hardly, given how much they've attacked her recently. But let me just say this, Mike, and I want to say very, very clearly, I am against any disruption, any I should say, out loud disruption of speeches. I actually don't really have a problem with silent protests or signs or things like that. But anyone who tries to shout down a scheduled speaker on the left or the right, I oppose. I think it's a bad thing to do. I think it's against the idea of free speech, and I oppose it, whoever does it. So I'll just say that up front. Although, Mike, there's no evidence this was Clinton people, right? I mean, this is probably just a few disgruntled people.
Say, I was not necessarily alleging it was the Clinton campaign coordinated by the Clinton campaign, but I think there are people who would probably pull the lever for.
Yeah, they clearly don't like Donald Trump. Although for all we know, they could be Jill Stein supporters. Who knows?
But they could be Bernie supporters.
Right, exactly.
Bernie hasn't consolidated all his people
yet. But the larger point though is that Donald Trump ran for office as a new kind of Republican, as someone who didn't follow the establishment, someone who tweaked his nose at the establishment. And the establishment is really trying, and I don't think they're going to succeed. We'll see. One speech does not a trend make. But they're really trying to hem him in. They're saying, don't speak off the cuff. Use the teleprompters that you used to mock. Do what we say. Follow what we say. And they're trying to get him to toe the line. I mean, his endorsement of Paul Ryan and John McCain, to me, couldn't have had less heart in it. I mean, I've heard Donald Trump be exuberant when he wants to be. He reminded me of a dog who has just peed on the rug and you've yelled at and slinks away and then, you know, tries to make nice, tail between his legs. That, to me, is what Donald Trump looked like as he endorsed Paul Ryan and John McCain and Kelly Ayotte, a dog that had just been spanked. I mean,
you know, I took it a little differently, Mark, and I certainly don't begrudge you your view on that. It's a legitimate interpretation. I took it more as someone who was overscripted. Look, Donald Trump does not take scripting well. He doesn't like it. He would prefer not to use the teleprompter at all. He would prefer to just sort of speak extemporaneously and sort of stream of consciousness rather than have a straight, clear, threaded message. And I looked at his endorsement of Ryan and McCain and Kelly Ayotte as more something that was scripted practice than he was told. Now, it'll go over best if you do it this way. And so he did it. And he was told to, you know, tone that part down. So whatever. I mean, I don't think it matters.
For the record, I just want to say that Donald Trump doesn't like to be scripted, and we Democrats don't like when he's scripted either. We like when Donald Trump shows his true stripes. So that's one thing that we and Donald Trump agree on. We don't like when his reins are on. We like to see him for all that he really is.
Let me say, I wonder when he will personally accept, and this is criticism of his campaign or his style as a candidate. Almost universally, his good press, his praise, and the mainstream acceptance of what he's saying and what his message is, and the lack of criticism comes when he does use the teleprompter. He got rave reviews for his convention speech. He got rave reviews today.
I'll agree to disagree on that.
On the convention speech. You know, I was watching pretty much. It was well received on almost every channel I was watching. And yet he still resists the concept of a consistent, threaded message that has been designed to reach the voters in the language that they would hear. I would hope that at some point he morphs into a candidate that accepts there are ways of being successful on the campaign trail and sticks with it.
Well, Mike, I'm sure that your dream is the dream of most Republicans. We'll see. I'm highly skeptical. I'm also give our callers a chance to join us in this discussion. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now, at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Mike Lane. He's the president of IntelliFin Strategies. We're talking about Donald Trump's very special week last week. I mentioned some of the things that happened since the convention. It's not just making fun of an attack on the Gold Star family. It's not just the endorsements of Paul Ryan and John McCain. It's not just claiming the election will be rigged. He also, by the way, he lied about getting a letter from the NFL complaining about the date the debate schedule. He, when a veteran gave him a Purple Heart, said, "I've always wanted a Purple Heart. It's much easier to get it this way." I'm paraphrasing, as I recall. What he said was worse than what I just said. He mentioned that Russia was not ever going to get in the Ukraine. But when told that they already were in Crimea, he basically said, "Well, you know, I understand that. That's okay." He suggested that Americans should pull their 401ks out of the stock market, which is really not good stock advice given that we're at record highs right now. I mentioned the crying baby at the rally. What more? It's hard to remember them all. Oh, he also apparently asked three times, why can't we use nuclear weapons? Why do we have them if we can't use them? In 1 hour, he asked that, and the former CIA head, including a number of Bush administration officials, have all distanced themselves from Donald Trump, saying they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's been a tough week. But, you know, Mike, I didn't come here to pick on you. I came here to pick on Donald Trump. Are there any of those things that he did defensible, or should we just try to wipe the slate clean and get past
it? Yeah, no, I think there's a lot there that's defensible. You know, if I was running the show, Mark, I would focus on the ones that really hit the mark rather than the ancillary ones. I happen to have been at the rally with the child in Virginia. He was teasing the mother. She was playing back. You know, you're really off base there as to what happened inside the arena. If you just look at the tape of the podium, you know, it maybe looks like one thing, but believe me, there was no harm, no foul, no blood spilled. The mother was perfectly happy with the way
let's talk about the military, because I know you're ex-military, and I certainly value your service. And one thing that Democrats and Republicans, I think, very much agree on is that we support the military. We certainly support the sacrifice. We may disagree on some military strategy, but everyone values the sacrifice that our veterans, our armed men and women serving, make. We honor and cherish Gold Star families. And even when they occasionally come out and attack, I remember when Cindy Sheehan, mother of a son that died, really came out very, very strong against George W. Bush. And I remember George W. Bush handling it, frankly, pretty well. It's not easy to, you know, say that you disagree with someone while at the same time honoring the sacrifice she's made. And I remember thinking that George Bush did a good job. The thing, and we're going into a break, Mike, so I'm going to ask you to respond after the break. But the thing that really surprised me was this was something that isn't partisan. Democrats, Republicans always praise military families, and Donald Trump seems to not have done that, and it seems to have hurt him.
Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Mike Lane. He is the president of IntelliFin Strategies. It's his job to give strategic advice to Republican candidates, I'm kind of wondering what advice he'd give to Donald Trump other than stay on the script. But before I get there, Mike, I want to ask you the question I asked before the break, give you a chance to respond. It seemed to me that the attack on Gold Star families was the thing that caused the most revulsion, I guess, of any single thing that he did last week. Do you agree?
Well, Mark, let me say, first of all, it's never a good idea to get involved in a back and forth with a Gold Star family on that. It's just not an argument that even if you have righteousness on your side, you're going to win. You know, you mentioned George Bush and his episode with the
Cindy Sheehan.
Anyway, You know, he actually lost that argument by treating her with respect. I don't know how it would have come out had he come out. But what happened was, you know, she set up her vigil outside his ranch in Texas.
Right.
There was nothing else going on news-wise. Congress was on vacation. The president was on vacation. And she sat there, and for 14 days, the press went to visit her little vigil site and covered her. And George Bush's refusal to respond to her, refusal to engage her, to criticize her, wound up, he dropped tremendously in the polls, notwithstanding the fact that she was really, you know, dead wrong about everything.
He should have met with her. I mean, you meet with her and then you agree to disagree. I mean, right, shouldn't that have been what he did?
Well, I think he did. You know, they brought her in for an hour one day, and then she went back out and she kept the vigil. She didn't go home, and the press would cover her every single day for 14 days, and they would ask the president about it, and he wouldn't engage on it, saying, "I've had my thing," and he went down in the polls.
But here's my point: you clearly don't think that Trump handled it right, criticizing the mother for not speaking, saying that perhaps it was because of her religion that she wasn't speaking. Some of his people, Roger Stone, put out at the cons were actually closet terrorists. I mean, it was he said at one point, you know, that he viciously attacked me, and I mean, what he should have done is done, frankly, the way I thought Hillary Clinton responded well to the woman that accused her of murder. I mean, much more severe stuff than Khan accused the Trumps of, and basically said, look, you know, I understand this woman's in grief. I understand the Khans are in grief. I respect what their son did. He was a true American hero. And, you know, I really have nothing more to say on it.
You know, Mark, that's obviously the correct answer, and that's what I would have advised. But let's be clear on this. On both sides, both conventions had Gold Star presentations.
That's right.
But
Hillary handled hers much better than Donald Trump handled his critic.
Well, but I want to underscore, there's not much innocence to go around here. When you take to the stage voluntarily of a national political convention, you have, by definition, self-politicized the topic about which you're going to talk.
No question.
And I think that both Gold Star families would have better served their purposes and their stories and their grievances by not taking to the stage and intentionally politicizing the issue in front of a national audience.
I don't know. I think they have certainly the right to say what they want to say. You're always going to be challenged as President of the United States by people who say things that are, you know, extreme. And I think one of the things that Hillary Clinton pointed out, frankly, that probably her best played part of her entire speech for the Democratic National Convention, it was saying that a man you can bait with a tweet is not someone you can trust with nuclear weapons. The point is that Donald Trump is easily baited. If you challenge him, he's going to attack you, you know, all the way. Most of us believe, and I suspect you do as well, Michael, I'll give you a chance to respond, that when he refused initially to endorse Paul Ryan, that was payback for Paul Ryan initially refusing to endorse him. He even used the same language, you know, "I'm not quite there yet," which I think was very honest when Paul Ryan said it, and I think it was quite dishonest and just a poke in the eye when Donald Trump said it. This is a guy you can bait easily. Is that fair?
You know, I think that he's an inexperienced politician, and he's heard various things. The first is you respond immediately to any attack rather than letting it sit there unresponded to. Well, you know, a serious, you know, attack that people are widely viewing and widely hearing is the kind of attack that you respond to. But there are some that you don't. And I think that differentiating between the two is something that comes with experience on the campaign trail. Obviously, on the Ryan endorsement or lack thereof, it was, you know, playing tit for tat. Was he sort of you know, being sarcastic and humorous, you know, to himself under his breath, or was he being vindictive? I prefer to think it was the first. But the simple explanation is that all three of those people, Paul Ryan, Kelly Ayotte, and John McCain, are all facing primaries and had not been resolved yet. And the other piece of advice that he got, which I think is pretty true, is that it's not good for a presidential candidate to involve himself in inter-party primaries because all you're going to do is offend one side or the other side and lose supporters.
Look, Mike, a number of Republicans are coming out and saying this.
They are.
But far more than your ordinary race. I was thinking to myself how I would feel in your position. And I actually, you may not want my sympathy, but I actually have some sympathy for you, Mike. I was thinking to myself, I was trying to put myself in your shoes. And the only person I could think about who, to me, would put me in your shoes is Lyndon LaRouche. Now, you know who that is. Some of our listeners may not. Lyndon LaRouche is racist. He's anti-Catholic. He's anti-Jewish. He's a terrible human being. He's also been, I think, to jail a few times. I don't remember all the details. I do remember one time he accused Queen Elizabeth of being involved in the drug trade because he believes all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories. He's a nutcase wacko. The reason I mention his name is because he's run for president, I don't know how many times, in the Democratic Party. And thankfully, he's been rejected by landslides each and every time. If Lyndon LaRouche were to win the Democratic nomination, I would come on this air running against John McCain or Mitt Romney or Republicans whom I don't agree with politically, and I would endorse John McCain or Mitt Romney running against Lyndon LaRouche because even though I don't agree with their policies, I recognize they are stable human beings. They are not crazy. They're not wacko. They're not off. They're people I just disagree with. And that would be painful for me, but I would do that. When does Donald Trump go so far off the reservation, Mike, that you are willing to say, you know what, this guy's just, he's too unstable to be president?
Well, I mean, he's a long, long, long way from that. He's still on the reservation, Mark. I actually reject the comparison or the analogy here. Look, if you want me to find somebody that, you know, I would reject if they got the nomination,
David Duke,
would reject Lyndon LaRouche, let's talk about that whack job down in Mississippi, whatever his name is, that actually did get the nomination for the Senate one time. In the
David Duke, you're probably thinking of, in Louisiana.
Okay. So that's the kind of guy, but, you know, there's absolutely no comparison between the two. Donald Trump is not a racist by any means. You know, he's got a 69-year track record of living in New York, of having friends.
But
you
know, Mike,
never suggested at all
both Bushes...
that he was racist.
Both Bushes, Mitt Romney, John Kasich, John McCain wouldn't show up at the convention. I mean, it's unusual that past nominees of your party.
Let's talk. Look, McCain's in the race of his life for the nomination. I think his primary may be tomorrow or a week from tomorrow. But he's, you know, there's a woman down there, Kelly Ward, who's giving him a run for his money. The Bushes, I'm very disappointed in them, but I give them a pass because Donald Trump's part of his rise to the nomination was very, very intense criticism of George Bush's signature achievement. So, you know, it's not surprising that they would take their marbles and go home under those circumstances. It's terribly disappointing, and it does hurt, but, you know, I give them sort of a pass. The one I don't give a pass to is John Kasich. He has no excuse, and he's essentially ended his future of anything in the Republican Party by doing what he's doing.
Really? See, I don't think so. I think he's trying, and Cruz, and to some extent Rubio as well, they're trying to, they all think that this man's going down in a landslide, and they're trying to jump off the boat before it sinks.
Now, Rubio has said he's voting for Trump.
Ted
Cruz ended his future in the National Republican Party. I mean, never say never. Things can change. But when he was universally, really 99.99% of the convention floor, even the Cruz delegates roundly, lustily, and summarily booed him off the stage at the convention, he was visibly shaken. I mean,
well,
he did not
I think once
he was going to be the hero, and he was the goat.
I think once Trump loses in a landslide, Ted Cruz, who's already started running, I think, for president in 2020, will say, look, I told you so. And I think Cruz is betting not just on a loss, but on a landslide loss. But let me go back to John Kasich. John Kasich said to Jake Tapper yesterday, and I saw the interview, fascinating interview. He confirmed what had been reported in New York Times as sort of, not confirmed, but he confirmed that Donald Trump Jr. went to one of his senior staffers and not only offered John Kasich the vice presidency, but said he could do domestic and foreign policy. To which John Kasich immediately said, you know, I'm not interested. Do you believe John Kasich or do you believe Eric Trump Jr., Donald Trump Jr., who says it was a lie?
You know, I think there's probably a hybrid in there someplace. I think there were discussions as to what a partnership would be. There was discussion as to, okay, if this, would that happen? If this and this, would that and that happen? I doubt there was a written...
I'm sure it wasn't in writing.
...verbal offer on the whole thing. But, you know, clearly from about 3 days after Trump cinched the nomination, John Kasich, you know, backed out and was not engaged and a non-player. And they attempted to seduce him back in with a discussion as to what his role might have been, and he wasn't interested. So exactly, you know, what the he said, she said were on the whole thing, I would imagine it's a hybrid on the whole thing.
Do you get nervous when you watch Donald Trump speak that he's going to go off the teleprompter, off the reservation, you know, talk about how he wants to get a Purple Heart the easy way, or talk about how the election's going to be rigged? What do you think? I mean, are you worried when you watch him that this is just a person who can't be trusted to stay on message?
Well, you know, clearly he's not as good a candidate as he should be. Clearly he would be a much better candidate if he did stay on message. Clearly I would be much happier and much less nervous if he demonstrated a consistency of staying on message. So the answer is yes, yes, yes on that. But Mark, what am I looking at? I mean, you know, I would want a good candidate, the best candidate I could find, because the best candidate is the one who's most likely to get elected. But ultimately what we're doing is we're not electing a candidate, we're electing a president. And so I compare Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton, and I say, never Clinton, because Donald Trump would make so much better a president than Hillary Clinton would, that in my case, it's not even a decision to be made. It makes itself. So I'm not nervous at all about what a Trump presidency would be, although every time I see him speaking, if there's not a teleprompter there and he's not sticking to it, I do wonder deep down inside what's next.
Now, of course, your job is to help Republican candidates with their spin and to make, you know, to help them win. You've got an uphill battle with Donald Trump. 50 of the nation's most senior Republican national security officials, most of them cabinet members, top aides to President George W. Bush, have signed a letter saying, quote, Donald Trump lacks the character, values, and experience to be president and would put at risk our country's national security and well-being. When asked who is more knowledgeable to be president, Hillary Clinton wins by 50 points. It's in the 70s to the 20s. I don't have the poll in front of me, but I've seen it. When asked who has the temperament to be president, Hillary Clinton's in the high 60s. Donald Trump is in the teens. You know, even the people who don't like Hillary Clinton for whatever reason or dyed-the-wool Republicans, Mike, they question his temperament and his knowledge and his experience.
Well, Mark, I think it's certainly fair to question his knowledge. He doesn't have the experience in that area. He's coming up to speed slowly on it. We would all hope that there would be. But let's face it. I mean, the world is full of people who had absolutely no experience. I cite Barack Obama as somebody who was terribly unprepared to take the world stage as president of the United States, and 8 years later has learned virtually nothing about it. He embarrasses the country and embarrasses himself time after time after time. Hillary Clinton's foreign policy record is replete with failure after failure after failure. Let's not forget, she's the one who hit the reset button with Vladimir Putin, and where are we on that now? Our foreign policy is basically, in the Middle East, is basically being run out of the Kremlin.
Let's talk about Vladimir Putin, because Putin, obviously, they tried to reset the relationship. Putin had none of it. And Hillary Clinton, frankly, is more hawkish. It's one of the reasons why I like her. She's more hawkish than Obama on, for example, Ukraine. She was active in pushing very hard to arm Ukraine against the invasion. Russia, of course, invaded Crimea and then sent troops pretending not to be Russian in the east part of Ukraine. And she fought very hard for that. I'd be the first to criticize Obama, frankly, for not standing up for Ukraine the way I'd like them to, like him to. But Donald Trump, in the other direction, has not only denied that Russia was in Ukraine, promised Russia would never enter Ukraine, apparently unaware that they were already there, but then once he found out they were there, basically said, well, the people of Crimea would rather Russia be there. And he seemed like someone who could, you know, I mean, there's a op-ed in today's Washington Post by Jackson Deal who said, quote, Putin would eat Trump's lunch is the headline, that he's a useful idiot for Vladimir Putin. And given that Donald Trump, when you praise him, tends to, you know, be like a lapdog, and Vladimir Putin knows how to manipulate him, I get very worried about Donald Trump and Putin.
All right, Mark, I'm going to leapfrog you on this and take you where you want me to go or where you want to push me, and I'm going to help you out with it. But first of all, you know, Jackson Deal of the Washington Post is the useful idiot. I mean, that guy, you know, he hasn't written an intelligent editorial in the 20 years he's been with the Post, and I keep hope springs eternal. But the guy is a Democratic shill, and he just, you know, shoots the Democratic line. Now, look, let's get back to what you asked, which was the comparison between Hillary and Trump. Look, I'll stipulate, I think you quoted me a 70-20 poll. You know, let's not even, you know, justify the 20% who think that Trump knows more about all this stuff than Hillary does. No, this is a 99-1, you know, answer. You know, Hillary's been there. She's more experienced and has acquired more knowledge over the course of her career of European affairs than has Donald Trump. I'll stipulate to that. It's, you know, it's no big deal. But again, I'll point out, you know, you've brought up twice in this show, in the conversation, the idea of Crimea. Well, you know what? It was President Obama who gave the Crimea to Putin. It wasn't Donald Trump. So, you know, just because you're president of the United States and allegedly you've learned something doesn't mean that you're any good at it. And Barack Obama's been pretty bad at it from day one.
We have to take a break, Mike. I'll let you finish when we come back. I also want to talk about Paul Manafort and his ties to Putin's stooge in Ukraine. And just this whole authoritarian sensibility of Donald Trump, who praised Saddam Hussein, for example. Weird stuff. 888-488-MARK if you want to call in. 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. Just a couple minutes left. I actually looked up Jackson Deal because I didn't think of him as a real liberal. I thought he was a neoconservative. We may disagree on what he's like, but he did support the war in Iraq. So that wasn't a standard, you know.
Well, Mark, I think the majority of the Democratic Party supported it.
Yeah, but my point is he's hardly a left-wing Democrat. Let me ask you the question, though, about what really concerns a lot of, frankly, people in your party, and that is Donald Trump talking about Putin. His campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has a long history of working for some pretty brutal dictators, including the Ukrainian puppet put in by Vladimir Putin. And, of course, Donald Trump actively asked the Russians to hack into Hillary Clinton's emails, basically asked a foreign power, an enemy, to commit espionage. This suggests to many people that Trump just doesn't know what he's talking about with regard to Putin.
Well, a couple things, Mark. First of all, he didn't ask Russia to do it. What he said was, if Russia's already done it, maybe you'd be a hero if you turned the emails over to the FBI. And he was clearly joking. You know, for Hillary to get so outraged
about this, joking.
Using the treason, he was telling a joke. And if you can't laugh at a joke, then, you know, perhaps you're unfit yourself for the president.
He seemed very serious to me.
No, he wasn't. It was a joke. Come on, let's be serious. All right, two things, because I know we only have, like, maybe a minute and a half.
We only got, like, 30 seconds, so very quick.
All right. The first is, I'll stipulate, Trump is negotiating in public the future of NATO. That's a mistake. He should not do it because when you do it in public, Putin hears things and he may misinterpret
right.
it. Advantage Hillary on that one. Where Hillary loses is on her support of the $400 million ransom for the hostages in Iran and her support for the nuclear Iran deal, which even Obama himself says they will be able to get a nuclear bomb within 13
Mike,
years.
Mike, we're out of time, but I always enjoy arguing with you, and we will do it again soon. Thank you for coming here on the Inside Scoop.